Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. Yes, yes. I am Teron Davenport. You are now talking with TD. We got Elijah Campbell making it happen, hitting the switches, bringing these bumps to you. Awesome show today. It's not just going to be one Elijah. We got two Elijahs. We got the producer, and we got your third-round pick, Tennessee Titans DB Elijah Molden, coming on to talk shop. You know he's a guy that gets the TD stamp of approval. This is someone that we've talked about multiple times as a perfect match. We're going to get into that, actually, why he matches with the Titans so well. So stay tuned for that. Run TMC each and every week. You know what it does. We talk shop with Titans legend Chris Sanders. It's always high energy, a fun time. And we're also going to give you a little bit of Zach Ertz and Carson Wentz talk. Had to pull out the Rolodex, dial my guy, my ESPN NFL Nation teammate, Tim McManus, covering the Philadelphia Eagles. So we got all that for you. But more importantly, we finally got to talk to Todd Downing. Hot dog. Yes, we got to talk to him. And I was excited about that because this is something that I've wanted to do for quite some time. Just get some of his feedback about this system, you know, and what he's doing. One of the things that stood out to me was how he mentioned the fact that He is not looking to put his own Todd Downing stamp on the offense. He wants to keep continuity, but there's balance to it because he also isn't saying that he's there to replace Arthur Smith. So somewhere in between, that's where this offense is going to settle. I don't think that's a bad thing. One of the other things that stood out, he said, it's always easy when you have a guy like Derrick Henry back there, but that being said, you got to have balance. And that's something that they're going to look to do. It's going to take a little bit, right? Because as of right now, Julio Jones is not a Titan. I don't know if it's going to happen. It seems like it's trending that way, but who knows? But if that doesn't happen, guess what's going to happen? A.J. Brown. Downtown A.J. Brown going to have a lot of DBs around. That's really what it boils down to. So they're going to have to find some ways to get him open. Coach Downing actually talked about that, and he made a good point about some of the things they're going to look to do. There's one thing that was really intriguing. So let's hear what he had to say.
Between, you know, our run game and you know, AJ's you know, success in the past, you're going to see some different looks. We'll look for ways to get him singled up. We'll look for ways to help him with different coverage indicators and things like that. But, you know, I think that'll be fun to watch progress and see where we can move him around, you know, or expand his route tree a little bit. And, you know, watch him have successes as we expand it.
Expand his route tree a little bit. I like that idea, right? Because if you look what A.J. Brown does, slant, out, post, dig. I mean, he does run an assortment of routes, but I would like to see more double moves. I would like to see just like deeper comebacks, those type of things, and not have it always be off of play action. Because I believe that he can run routes pretty well. He's a big, like, lumbering type of guy. So, you know, you're not going to see him just makes a DB fall, but he's someone that could use his size. I mean, the guy, his shoulders, Elijah, it's interesting looking at A.J. Brown. Like, he's built like a basketball player. Okay. And, and you know, basketball players are always like, you got the heavy triangular shape as far as shoulders to the waist. Mm-hmm.
Dwight Howard shoulders.
Yeah, yeah. He in essence, has Dwight Howard shoulders. So you could use that to kind of box out and just, like, bump and break and do those type of things. So I think that's a way that they could get him open. But then he also mentioned moving him around. One of the things that I love that they did with him, and I want to say It was against the Bears. He caught a 42-yard. I believe it was like 42 yards. He caught a fade from the slot. And you have what's called a spray release, right, where he kind of just releases outside and just, you know, runs a fade route like that. And you get instant. He beat Buster Screen, I think it was, on the play. I think it was Screen. I don't remember exactly. But anyway, putting him in the slot is the way you can move him around and get those matchups, because not all corners travel, right? You got some, you have some elite cover corners. Not all of them are going to travel with the top receivers, so you can find matchups. And that's something that I remember Arthur Smith as well as especially Matt LaFleur. He did that with Corey Davis. You watched the game against the Patriots, the game against the Eagles. You saw Davis operating from the slot too. He had a shoulder injury, by the way, and last week with the Jets. Hopefully everything's all right with him. But you watch how they did that, and that's something I could see them doing with A.J. Brown. And honestly, that goes back to even, you know, Bill Walsh and Mike Shanahan. And these guys did that. Mike Shanahan, obviously, under George Seifert, they did that with Jerry Rice. They would move him around because they didn't want him going against Deion. Old Prime, like, they had some battles. Like, you better YouTube it. It's on the internet. They had some battles, so they would move him around. That's something I could see this Titans team doing, and that's a good thing that Todd Downing mentioned that, and I like that because it shows that, okay, he's looking at it from this perspective. We have a player that is an ascending player, a really good talent, but how can we make him get to that next level? That's really good for Todd Downing to look at it that way. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this works. I asked him just about coaching, calling plays for a defensive guy, you know, because this isn't his first rodeo doing that, right? He had to do that for Jack Del Rio with the Raiders. We know, like, you know, you had a pretty solid season. Derek Carr balled out. Then the next year, you know, the bottom fell out and he got fired and, you know, it was what it was. But then he went to the Vikings also, and he saw John DeFilippo get blamed for not calling enough running plays.
You seen the flip side of the coin.
Defensive minded coaches want you to run the football. They want you to be ultra effective and efficient. Don't turn it over, right? Run the football, control, low turnovers, field position.
Clock
matter. You want to, and that's all ball control. You want to make it easier for the defense. So I think having seen that, and he wouldn't say that he understands that, but he does. He tried to say like every situation is different, and each coach brings something different to the table. But let's face the facts. Mike Vrabel wants you to run that route. You know what I'm saying? He wants you to pound the football. He wants that, and I think that's the key to balance and continuity from what they had last year. So that's the offense. We did get to speak to Shane Bowen as well, and he's now the defensive coordinator. One of the things that stood out to me is just the fact that I saw him at the DBs. I saw him at the linebackers. I saw him at the outside linebackers. I saw him on the D-line. He is getting to each and every position group. Why is that important? Well, if you have a message, so Elijah, let's say I had something that I wanted you to know, but I wanted Ian to know, and I wanted Max to know it also. What's the best way for me to make sure all you guys know that message?
Communicating with that, with all of us, like, with that at the same time.
At the same time, or even just period, direct communication. Mm-hmm. Hey, listen, this is how we want the show to go.
Group
Max,
text.
This is how we want the show to go. Ian, this is how we want direct communication. Mm-hmm. It's a way that you could deliver your message. Now, as position coaches, it's your job to deliver the coordinator's message as well as the head coach's message. But how much more effective is it when it comes from the horse's mouth? So I think it's very significant. It's not something that anyone's talking about, but it's very significant that he's working with these different groups. It's important. That's something that has changed from last year. And I'm not saying it's an excuse because, look, that defense was what it was. Every one of them need a swift kick in the butt. You know what I mean? And some of them, their swift kick in the butt was, hey, don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you, right? Adoree Jackson, Malcolm Butler, right? You know, and some of these guys. So that's how it worked out. I think this defense is going to be better, but it's going to be really going to come down to them making some changes, obviously. You guys and girls, what did you say every week? Hey, why are they playing 10 yards off the ball on 3rd and 7? Right?
Popular complaint.
Popular complaint. Legitimate. It's a question I've asked multiple times after games. Well, I thought it was interesting that Shane Bowen said, well, you know, Janoris Jenkins, the jackrabbit, getting in here is going to help be more aggressive and challenge receivers. What did I say all the time, Elijah? All the time. I said, look, man, don't give these guys a free release off the ball. You got to challenge them. He's saying that's what they're going to do. Everyone said, well, you know, I don't know about this Janoris Jenkins sign. Well, I think the Jackrabbit signing is a good one, and I said it. He's a guy that's a solid man. Now he's going to get beat. He's going to get beat.
He'll play aggressive, though. He's not going to stay back at the line of scrimmage. It's never something he's done.
Aggressive guys like that get beat from time to time.
It's the risk you take.
It's collateral damage. It's the risk you take, right? I would much rather have a guy that, okay, yeah, he might get beat from time to time, but a lot of times he's going to beat you.
Watch too. Week 1 against the Buccaneers last season. Saints and Bucks, where he jumped that pass pick from Tom six. Brady. Had a pick six.
Exactly. And so that's what you get, right? So I think it's going to be interesting. And then that confrontation, that chatter at the line of scrimmage, that helps give the guys rushing the passer extra time to get to the quarterback. It all works hand in hand, back end and front end. They're only as good as each other. So that's something we have to focus on. But I just thought it was interesting that he actually opened up because, right, you know, you say, okay, well, last year he was the coordinator. He just didn't have the title. No, there's more changes to it than that. And he actually talked about that. So let's hear what Coach Bowen had to say about what's different. Excellent question by Teresa Walker. Here we go.
Yeah, it's been good. I mean, it's changed. It's definitely changed. Just the position, the title, the stuff that comes with it. Having control over the whole unit, my perspective on everything, making sure we're all on the same page, seeing things the same way, and ultimately being the final voice, right? So it has changed in that regard. It's been great. The players have been great. We're doing a lot of new things, a lot of different things, just in how we go about our day, how we go about our business, and then obviously schematically some things change as we go with all the new personnel and everything else. So it's been good up to this point.
Absolutely. So there you have it. That's what's going to be different. You notice he said having the final say. I love just – he's dropping little
– It was subtle. That was subtle.
It's subtle, but it's like that phantom punch, right? You don't see it. It comes and you're like, oh. And that's really what it was. That's a good point, having the final say. So along with that,
that answers a lot of questions that we asked during this offseason so far of who was in charge, if we're trying to assign blame.
Right. I don't know that it was always on Shane Bowen. However, along with that, he said that he welcomes the help from others. And you have the whole idea of there being too many chefs in the kitchen. I mean, you got Jim Schwartz. Oh, alpha, type A, absolutely.
Guy who's done it before.
Yeah, done it before. He got Mike Vrabel. We already know his deal. And then Jim Haslett, he's done it before too. I mean, he's coached longer than we've been alive. I think he's coached more than 44 years. However, you got tenured guys, right, that have been there. Shane Bowen was like, hey, look, I welcome their help. That's humility. But end of the day, like we could sit here and talk as positively as possible, but that defense was dog mess last year. And if
it's much worse.
And if it's the same this year, then you know, there needs to be some seats heating up because you can't have like back to back years. And now, okay, they were top eight in turnovers, you know what I mean? Which is significant, but historically bad third down percentage allowed. Historically bad red zone scoring. You can't have that, especially if this team wants to win. So that's pretty much what I wanted to get into as far as the coordinators. Again, my energy just comes from just being excited to finally get to talk to Todd Downing as a coordinator, to finally get Shane Bowen on and the things that they said. Titans fans, you guys should be really excited because I think there are some positive things that are going on. Now, granted, no Super Bowl is won at this point, so let's not get too ahead of ourselves. But the arrow is pointing up, if you ask me. So we're going to go to a break, pay these bills real quick. And if you want to pay some bills, you definitely make sure you reach out to us. We're always looking for advertising, marketing. And remember, we like the kind that jingles, but rather the kind that folds. Hey, it's Teron Davenport. You ever had to sit and wait for 2 hours or longer to get new tires put on your car? Well, you don't have to do that anymore. Call my friends at Freedom Tire Guys. They're Nashville's premier mobile tire company that does it all. New tires, balance, rotation, everything. And they come to you. Your work, your job, your house, you name the spot. Head online to freedomtireguys.com, fill out their tire calculator, pick your new tires, and schedule your service date. It's that easy. If you don't see something you like, give them a call and they'll find it for you. Check them out today at freedomtireguys.com.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Yeah. Keep it rolling. Yes, sir. You hear the music. You know what time it is. Run TMC. A bunch of energy. I got Chris Sanders in the place to be. It's you. It's me. What's it going to be?
Run TMC.
You already know it. I'm going to intro him a little bit different, though. You know what I mean? Because we're going to... And now, starting for the Boston Celtics, we have point guard Dennis Johnson.
And starting for the Rockets, we have Sam Cassell. What's up, boss, man? You good?
What's going on, man?
Man, I'm good, man. Just chilling, man. I'm ready for football to start, all this craziness stuff going on in the NFL, man. Just ready for them to lace it up and get into camp, and let's go get this thing.
No doubt about it. I'm ready for it, too. We got mini camp. We got everything going. I tell you, every day is like Christmas. It's like you wake up in the morning, and you're like, hey, I get to open up another gift. That's why they call it the present, right?
Yeah, man. Exactly, man. I can't wait to see, you know, the gift that we're going to see. Are we going to see a Super Bowl? Are we going to see an AFC South Championship? What are we going to see? What's the gift we're going to see, man?
I don't know what it's going to be, but look, man, like, I always say I don't really have a horse in the race, but I do have a horse in the race because if this team goes to the Super Bowl, I just am going to – I'm going to love the fact that the folks there at the mothership are going to be forced to have me on talking about the Titans instead of old Tom Brady and all this other – because, you know, Tom Brady – he breaks a fingernail. It's a segment on these shows, man. It's
If he trips, you know, if he trips, they're gonna put in slow motion that he tripped with greatness.
Yep. And meanwhile, you got Derrick Henry running through people's lips, as you say. You got AJ Brown carrying a whole defense into the end zone, man. I'm excited about this year, though, honestly. I'm excited. So let's get into the offense, right? Todd Downing, he spoke. He mentioned some pretty interesting things, and I thought of you as soon as he said this, right? And he was asked about A.J. Brown, and he said that they're going to move him across the formation. So I naturally asked him about versatility, move him around. Yeah. So I asked him about versatility and across the formation and those type of things. But he said they're going to expand his route tree. As a guy who played the position, a guy who, you know, did many things as an Oiler / Texan or Titan, excuse me, almost traded you away.
I know, man.
What do you think of that comment about expanding A.J. Brown's route tree?
It just makes you so much valuable. And we always talking about a receiver that's taking it to the next level. This is taking it to the next level. You know, when I played for the Tennessee Titans / Oilers, you know, I played a couple of positions. I played X and I played Z. But when you start moving, when I say X and Z, that's the, you know, X goes away from the call, Z goes to the call with the tight end. But with me, with A.J. Brown, you can put him in a slot and put him at the H wide receiver in a three wide receiver set. So he just makes you so more valuable, and then he gets the matchups that he wants. So if you put him in a slot, he's probably going to be on a linebacker, or he's going to be on a safety. It all depends on what the coverage is. So it just makes him more valuable. It makes him catch more balls. I mean, don't be surprised if you start using him in different formations and start moving around, and, you know, don't be surprised if he catches 100-some balls this year because he's that valuable. I mean, it just shows you that he's going from being a good wide receiver to one of the best in the wide receiver, and that's why they're moving him around.
It's really interesting you mentioned that, going from a good to one of the best, because one of the topics that I wanted to write about was, will we see A.J. Brown become an elite receiver? And it's crazy because my editor and I, we had a conversation. He was like, well, isn't he already elite? I was like, wow.
No.
I don't believe he's in the upper echelon of elite. I'll say he's one of the better ones, but I don't think he's there. So I believe what you're saying, right? Moving him around. You put him in the slot. We go back to that game against the Ravens. I mean, he was eating Marlon Humphrey alive.
Eating him up. You know, I mean, you know, when we talk about Ben, and I want to make the difference, when you talk about him being a good wide receiver, he is a good wide receiver.
Absolutely.
But he's got to go from being a good wide receiver to a game changer. Mm-hmm. When I say a game changer, Randy Moss game changer, Julio Jones game changer, those are guys that change the game. I'm not saying that A.J. Brown doesn't change the game, but he's got to get to that level to where he just takes over a game, to where, you know what, I don't care if you double me, I don't care if you bracket me, I'm catching the ball and I'm making plays. Because if you look at some of the games he had last year, sometimes he drops a ball at a crucial time. I'm not saying he's not a great player, but you got to make those plays every single time. That's why Jerry Rice was good, Randy Moss was good, Chris Carter was good. Those guys made the play and they actually changed the game. And if A.J. Brown can get to that level, then now you put him with the elite.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and it's what he has to do, especially, all right, look, let's say they don't trade for Julio Jones, right? Let's say they don't do it. You got Josh Reynolds on the other side.
Right.
I mean, look, defenses are going to be rolling to him. So to your point about the double coverage or the you know, those type of things, he has to be able to still make a play. And along with that, Ryan Tannehill has to trust him.
Hey, no doubt.
Even though you're covered, you're open.
Yeah, but you just got to understand. Like, that's why Antonio Brown was so good, because he knew that, okay, if they're bracketing him, if the guy is trailing me and there's one guy in front of me, that's what I mean, brackets, he's got to understand what guy do I need to beat. The guy that's trailing me, he makes no difference because he's in a trailing position. So he's got to understand where I put my eyes, where do I burst off the cut, how do I change hips, how do I change directions. And I think when he gets to that level, now we're talking about elite receivers. Because I watched Jerry Rice. Jerry Rice and a guy named Webster Slaughter that used to play with the Houston Oilers /Titans. I mean, not Titans, but Houston Oilers. Those guys, when those guys got double, they understood what guy I need to beat. And that's where makes those guys so special. So if A.J. Brown can get to that level to understand, okay, if it's brackets, I know what I got to do. If it's cover two, I understand that the corner's playing the flat and the safety's playing his half. So if I got a post route, I got to understand which way to run it because the safety playing his half.
Exactly, and that's a great point. And it's funny, Webster Slaughter. Let me tell you something about Webster Slaughter.
Man,
yo, I used to murder cats in Super Tecmo Bowl with him. Huh?
Man.
And Ernest Givens.
Oh my gosh.
Haywood Jeffries, Curtis Dump.
Oh,
man,
my gosh.
Look, let me tell you something. I was killing them with one of my favorite quarterbacks of all time, Warren Moon.
Yeah,
man,
oh, my God.
It was no match. But let's get back on course with this Titans offense. Another thing that Todd Downing mentioned is run TMC, so we got to incorporate the rushing attack. He was like, man, with Derrick Henry back there, it's easy. It's always easier with him back there. So looking at how this offense needs to have balance, we got into A.J. Brown.
Mm-hmm.
How important is it for – Derrick Henry, do you think he still should get like that 300 carry mark?
I mean, you have to, but we need another running back. I'm not saying if Arrington can do it or not, the backup running back, but you don't want to wear him down, and he starts wearing down in the second half of the season. We just got to make sure he gets those carries and he doesn't take those hits. But I agree with you. When you have Henry, he's just such a great talent. He's physical. He's not running side to side when he first got in the league. He's running through people's lips like what we said. But I think for Henry to take it to the next level, he's got to be more versatile. And I'm not talking about his running game. I'm talking about his passing game, because when it's third and six or seven, he's coming out the game. So if we can figure out a way to keep him in the game, but also, you know, get the ball in his hands, passing the ball, I think then his game is going to go to another level, because when Henry goes out the game, the defense knows it's going to be a pass. So if we can figure out a way to make sure that he can touch the rock, even if they put him in a formation, even if he's going in motion and lining up in a slot and catching a little slant or something, or a little choice route, that just takes his game to a whole different level.
Yeah, you know what I love with the backs like Evans is that Texas route combo, you know, where he runs that angle route out of the backfield.
Oh, yeah.
That's such a way to take advantage of these linebackers, you know.
Right.
Sans Devin White or Deion Jones, those types, you know what I mean? But I think that's something that they could take advantage of. What do you think of Evans working as a receiver? I know, you know, we didn't get to talk about that last week. So what do you think? Because when they were in 7-on-7, when they were in Skelly, he was still in the backfield. But during Indy period, he wasn't with Coach Tony Dews. He was with Rob Moore running routes.
Yeah, but see, it's a different. Where are you going to put him at? If you put him out there on the perimeter, you got to run comebacks, you got to run curls, you got to do all the things. So if you're talking about putting him in the wide receiver, are they putting him in the slot because they don't have no slot receivers? Or they're putting him in the slot to get him the ball in different ways? But he's got to understand how to run routes, because if you look at the guy that was in the slot last year and the year before he got hurt, was Humphreys. Humphreys was one of those guys that run those choice routes and those slants, those quick hitches, and runs with the ball. So are they going to plan a way to do that with Evans? And if they do that, man, that could be a dangerous combination, because last year when he came into camp, he was hurt and nobody kind of knew what he did. But later in the season when he came back, he made some of those explosive plays. So maybe they want to get him the ball quick, a quick slant, a quick choice route, or maybe just a quick out to get him the ball to make that to move the chains and be a home run hitter.
You know, Chris, there's a couple things when you say that. I think of a few things, right? And the first thing, you mentioned him being outside. I don't have a problem with him being outside, but you know what I do. I come out with two backs, right? So and two tight ends, right? So we'll go 22 personnel. And I would motion him out wide over top of the numbers. And you know what? Actually, the Chargers did that a couple years ago against Jayon Brown. And
because the linebacker has to get out there.
Exactly. Austin Eckler beat him for a touchdown. I think it was like a 35-yarder. So that's exactly what I would do on that situation. But then the other thing, when you talk about catching those passes out of the backfield, I think of Darren Sproles. Now, folks, let's be clear. I am not saying Darrington Evans is Darren Sproles, because he categorically, unadulteratively – All right, listen, I'm getting my Jesse Jackson on. I'm making up words. He is not the same. However, you could use him similarly. And I think really that the comparison for me is Deion Lewis.
No
Coincidentally,
doubt.
I talked to Deion Lewis a couple years ago, and he told me that when he was in Cleveland, was it North Turner? It was someone. One of the coordinators told him, he said, look, you want to last in this league, go watch Darren Sproles. You want to be like that. And I think in this scheme, this system, I think there is absolutely an opportunity for a third down guy. Darrington Evans should take that by the bullhorn and say, that's my job.
Yeah, but see, TD, even take it a step further. Say if we go a 20 personnel, you got Evans in the backfield, you got Henry in the backfield, you got three wide receivers. Motion him out to the single side, and then now you go a two-by-two, and now you just created a matchup to where Evans can run a choice route against the linebacker, and let's go eat.
Yeah, go eat. So that's the kind of thing that I think this offense brings. Another thing, I still believe that they – need to find that guy running those jerk routes and choice routes and those type of things, right? Yeah. Because you talk about knowing how to run routes, and you know, we like to get into that. For me, you know, it's about the leverage, right? You got to know how to set 100%. It up, how to lean into the guy and then break out, you know, and that's what allows a slow person like Jason Witten to be uncoverable. That's what allows Anthony Firkser to be not uncoverable, but to be a tough cover. Who on this team could line up, you know, in that slot and run that? I don't know that they have that guy at the moment. That's why I keep going back to Jamison Crowder.
I think the only person I may say, and you may correct me if I'm wrong, but Batson.
Yeah.
That's only, I mean, that's it. That's it. I mean, who else? I don't know if Des Fitzpatrick can do it because I know he kind of struggles with getting out of his cut a little bit at the top of the route. But who else is it? I don't know if the guy that got from the Broncos, was it Fred Brown? I can't remember.
Oh, Fred Brown. He's a good looking player. Now I was watching him. Rodgers is a pretty interesting
Chester
guy
Rogers,
too.
Rodgers, yes.
I'm gonna tell you who it is though, Chris. It's Mason Kinsey.
Ooh.
It's Mason Kinsey. That I just remembered him. That guy I remember in camp last year, one on ones, especially low red zone. He was eating those corners like Kareem Moore and those guys. He was eating them up, man.
But was this in shorts or was this in pads?
No, this was in camp, like in actual pads. Like they were.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Because in shorts, you look really good. But when them bullets start flying, you're like,
yeah.
But I agree with you, TD. We got to find a guy. The Tennessee Titans need to find a guy that can be a Humphreys, that can get out of the cut real quick. And also, here's the key. It's not just about getting out of the cut. It's getting out of the cut with timing because, you know, when the defense is blitzing, you got to make sure you get out of that cut with chest over your knees and explode out of the cut because the ball's coming out fast. So I don't know what guy is there, and I agree. I haven't seen the McKenzie guy, but the only person I can say that comes close to really doing that is a Batson because Batson's a small, quicker guy, got some good speed. Because when those guys are blitzing, you got to get your head around, you got to burst off the cut, and you got to explode. So only person I can say to come close to that is maybe Batson.
We'll see what happens, man. Yo, that was a fire segment, man. It was
fire, dog.
You know, fire!
Man, it's like you know, kissing a catfish, man. You can't do it.
Unless you tell him LeJuan. He could drink off one.
I know. Dude, that dude crazy, man. I love that dude, man. Yeah, I love that dude. I'll leave it there.
Yeah, that's wild. Well, yo, I appreciate you, Casey Jones.
Always.
It's always good, you know, talking a little shop. Bernie Bickerstaff Jr.
Boy, you look like Sam Cassell's cousin, Sam Cassell.
That's why you look like Siddell 3.
Man, you crazy, man. TD, always a pleasure doing the show with you, boss, man.
All right, for sure.
No doubt.
This is AJ Brown, and you're talking with TD.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD. Anytime you hear Meek Mill, especially that music, Dreams and Nightmare, you know something is associated with the 215 with Philadelphia, and that's what we're doing. We're bringing in my ESPN teammate, Tim McManus, covering the Philadelphia Eagles. Tim, what's going on?
TD, I can't hear that song without thinking of the 2017 NFC Championship game against the Vikings when they're playing that pregame, and you could just tell. I mean, you could tell when you got to the parking lot, but when you got into the stadium and saw the juice that was flowing through the link and the way that the players were just completely amped up as they were bouncing around pregame to that song, it was like, yeah, this game's over before it started.
No doubt about it. And that's why I played it, because I knew it would bring up that memory, man. And that was one of my favorite experiences ever, just associated with sports, period, let alone being someone covering the game. And then even you rolled over to the Super Bowl, man. When they came out, when Malcolm Jenkins let them out and that music on, I was like, man, Eagles are going to win by 100.
Yeah, and then that same song was on in the locker room.
Oh, my goodness.
Celebrating that Super Bowl. I mean, just being inside there, that was probably number one highlight of my career covering sports, was being in that room. And that was the crescendo when that song came on.
Yes.
So, yeah, a lot of memories sparking up here on this early June day.
You talk about going from 0 to 100 instantly. That's what Michael Kendricks did, man. Like, he was hugging Jeffrey Lurie. The next thing you know, he's grabbing a box of, like, peanut butter and jelly little pastry things, throwing them in the air. I was like, yo, they were going crazy. So that's definitely a good memory. And that was before we were officially teammates as ESPN compadres. So while I got you on, I want to shout you out and just let you know I appreciate your help getting this position. And it's been a blessing, man. So definitely thank you for that.
Please. I mean, it's all you. You've earned it. You know, it was so easy to see the work that you were putting in, how much you wanted it, how good you were at it. So Everything that that's come your way has been well deserved, my friend.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. So let's get into it, right? And you look at what the Eagles have going on. Zach Ertz is a guy that they're trying to move. I don't know if they're going to release him. What's going to happen? The Titans need a tight end. Well, at least we think they do. The fans think they do also, but they internally don't seem to think that way. But what is the deal with Zach Ertz? What happened there? I mean, just 2 years ago, the guy was a very productive player.
Yeah, and he's going to get back to being a productive player. This is like the longest, split ever, where the writing has been on the wall since last offseason, at least. I mean, even if you go back before then, during the 2019 season, they were having contract discussions that didn't go anywhere. They tried to bring that back in the offseason. And the level that the Eagles were offering was not getting into the realm that Ertz thought that he deserved. It wasn't into, that George Kittle type of territory or the Travis Kelce territory. And so those talks broke off. And ever since then, so now we're going on like a year plus, it's been clear that this was going to end with a split. And there was a lot of thought that it was going to be done already, given the fact that once you got to March in free agency and certainly during the draft, like here are some opportune times to trade Ertz while teams are looking for those tight ends and have some money to play with. But, Howie Roseman, the general manager of the Eagles, has been holding very firm. There have been interested teams. I think there's been upwards of four teams that have been circling around. But the offers just weren't to Roseman's liking, so he has decided to hold on to him for now. I think that eventually this split will happen and that Ertz will be traded, but we just haven't hit that point yet. So we're still waiting with the ultimate expectation that he will be traded.
Yeah, and it's definitely not out of the realm because, Howie Roseman, he's like the Mad Hatter with all the trades and stuff that he does. He'll trade at halftime if it calls for it. So I think it is still in the works. Do you have your finger or any idea where you think Ertz will end up?
Well, I think there's a few teams that have made sense that I believe have shown some level of interest. The Buffalo Bills being one of them, the Indianapolis Colts being another. Mm. I think the Chargers at one point could have been interested. The Seattle Seahawks at one point could have been interested. But the risk that you run by waiting for a better offer is that in the interim, the teams are filling that need.
Yeah.
And so I think that, a couple of those teams have fallen off. There's been some chatter about Arizona maybe jumping in here. So those are some of the teams that you've heard with potential interest in him. To me, I think that with Arizona being this kind of newcomer name that's popped up, along with the Bills have long made sense and the Colts. I think both sides would want one another in that circumstance. Ertz gets his reunion with Carson Wentz and
yeah.
Frank Reich, and the Colts would get a tight end that I think could boost that offense.
Yeah, that would definitely help. And we're talking to Tim McManus, ESPN, NFL Nation Eagles reporter. So you mentioned the Colts and you mentioned reuniting with Carson Wentz. Your story, the Dutch Destroyer, I don't know if I ever told you, but Super Bowl week, I was in the mall, in Mall of America, and it's funny because the work I was doing then, some of it was aggregate work, right? And I kind of touched on the piece that you did. And the family, I bumped into the family in the mall, and it was just a great experience. So I know you had an even bigger experience with that Dutch Destroyer story. That was an awesome story, and I know you got to connect to Carson Wentz. So that being said, seeing it go from that point to where it went, what went wrong?
Yeah, no, and thank you for the kind words on that story. It was one of the more meaningful ones that I've ever done. And it showed certainly that side of Wentz, who's got a really big heart, who has done a lot in terms of the charity work. And I just think generally is a good person. I don't think that there's ever been really a lot of question about that. I think, obviously his play fell off and also – there was some level of truth to the fact that he had difficulty connecting with some of his teammates at times while he was in Philadelphia. And it wasn't because he was a jerk or anything like that. It was just sometimes, you know, it just, whether he wasn't reaching across the aisle quite as much, or he just couldn't, you know, maybe being a little bit reserved held him back in those efforts. Like, I think there was a legitimate thing when it came to the full connectivity between quarterback and teammates over the course of the long run, at least in some pockets of that locker room. And then I also think that when you have a type A personality that is as driven as Wentz is, coupled with the intelligence and the football intelligence that he possesses, you know, there is a level of control that I think that he wanted to kind of always have, you know, have his hands on everything, you know, just kind of gripping too tight, you know, white knuckled. And I think that came to whether it was, you know, game planning, when it was receiving criticism, receiving coaching, you know, those types of things. Sometimes he wasn't as vulnerable or responsive to those things as he needed to be. And so I think you couple all those things along with, you know, circumstance. Things got really weird because Nick Foles went and won the Super Bowl. You know, and then they draft Jalen Hurts. And he never seemed to be able to quite get his footing. And, you know, maybe the sky was falling to some degree around him during much of his career in Philly. I think if you add all those things up, it hopefully paints some of the picture of what you're dealing with. It was just like a good guy in kind of an awkward circumstance, you know, who just wasn't quite open enough to some of the things he needed to be open to, and was a little bit too controlling, I think, in some elements of the game. And so that I add all that up, and you know, it led to kind of an ugly divorce there in Philly, and then you know, a new chance in Indianapolis.
Yeah, man, irreconcilable differences. That's exactly what that situation was. It's just crazy because I mean, when I left to come here, hey, Carson Wentz and Nick Foles, those were legendary Eagles players, and it's just crazy to see it all unravel like that. But that being said, what are the Colts getting? I mean, is this a situation where they could put trust in their franchise that Carson Wentz is going to get them to the promised land?
Well, I think that he has to prove that. I think that it's legit that he has to prove that he can be a little bit more malleable. One of the things that's going for him certainly is that, you know, the trust between he and Reich is unmatched. I mean, those two really hit it off from day one, and Reich, I believe, was a big part of the reason why Wentz was successful, especially in that 2017 year. So that's in him. But I don't know that we're ever going to see, you know, the athleticism at the same level that he displayed before he tore the ACL and LCL, you know, before he had the fracture in his back. Like, I don't know that it's right to expect him to just suddenly bounce back to the early Carson Wentz athletically. But we know that he's got a really sharp mind. We know that he's got a really big arm. And I think you put those two things together, and there can be some, you know, some special moments that Indianapolis can have, especially with a really solid offensive line around him and some decent playmakers and good coaches. And so I think it's the perfect environment for him to thrive, but he's going to have to give a little bit on his end. I'm not sure whether he has conceded that or not. I'm not sure if he's going to allow the coaches to really, to coach him to the level that he needs to be. He needs to prove that after this past year especially. But if he can check that box, then he can do some pretty big things in Indy.
Yeah, I'm hoping for the best for him. So that's one transplant from Philadelphia to the AFC South. But there's another one, and there's one that came right here to Nashville, and it's almost a coming home for him because I know he loves Nashville, and that's Jim Schwartz. Was he just tired of it? What's your take on that? What happened there?
Yeah, I mean, I think there might have been a little burnout there. I think there were some health issues that he was dealing with. Nothing major, but some health issues that made him think about taking a step back and that being the right move for him at that time. I mean, we can also see, obviously, there's a big shift around that time where he decided to leave Philadelphia for Nashville, and that's with firing of Doug Peterson, turning over the entire coaching staff, and he was out in front of that. So I think it was just a factor of of him needing to take a little bit of a step back. He was contemplating retiring. You know, that was something that was on the table at that time, which kind of speaks to maybe a little bit of that burnout and those health concerns. But you know how football coaches, man, are.
Yeah.
They're lifers, TD, and it, you know, they step away for a minute and then they're right back in it because it's just who they are and what they're all about. And obviously Schwartz is a, you know, heck of a football mind with a lot of accomplishment in this league, and I'm sure he'll be an asset over there with the Titans.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And it's I got to run into him at rookie mini camp, so it was cool, you know, checking him out. And you know, I didn't get to hear any of his Jim Palmer, you know, his Baltimore Oriole isms. You know, he's always good for those. So we'll see what happens.
He
there.
He loves the baseball analogy.
Yeah.
He loves the baseball
analogy. That would always
he's
crack
one of
me
the
up.
Best coaches. Yeah, he's one of the best coaches at filibustering, too. He can talk for 20 minutes. You know, you look up at the clock and he's 20 minutes deep into an answer and still has managed not to give you the, you know,
yeah.
give you the hidden ingredients.
No doubt about it. We're talking to Tim McManus. And Tim, just to wrap up, I talked about a few Philly transplants to Nashville. Let's go to reverse, a Nashville transplant to Philly, and that's Derek Barnett. I remember he got drafted. I thought that he was going to be a top-tier pass rusher. It hasn't happened. They managed to hang on to him. I thought he might be a guy that, you know, wouldn't be back, but he is. What can be expected of Derek Barnett? I thought, you know, you break Reggie White's sack record, like you are supposed to be a good player.
No, I hear you, and I think his rookie year he showed flashes of that.
Mm-hmm.
He was a contributor on that Super Bowl team.
Yep.
You know, everybody remembers the strip sack from Brandon Graham, and the man who recovered it is Derek Barnett. He had a couple of memorable plays during that Super Bowl run that really stood out. And you know, and since that time, he's had some moments, but health has just been a major issue for him. He just hasn't been able to stay healthy, and that's such a big part of, you know, success in the league is being able to be there and available to your team for all 16 plus, now 17, and and he just hasn't been able to accomplish that. So here he is in, you know, the fifth year. Making a good amount of money, but the Eagles haven't given him a new contract yet. And so from a Philadelphia perspective, it feels like make or break for him. You know, they added Ryan Kerrigan.
Yeah.
Josh Sweat is part of that rotation as well. So I think for right now, you're still going to see Brandon Graham and Derek Barnett as the starting defensive ends. And I do believe that Barnett can have his best season ahead of him this season, but it's just the key, as it has been since he got in the league, he's got to stay upright.
I just, man, it's unfortunate, you know, because like I said, he was a guy I thought that would really blow up, and unfortunately it hasn't happened. Last thing, Julio Jones to the Eagles, is that something that you're thinking may happen?
I would say no to that, probably.
Okay.
I mean, you know, the Eagles are always involved in basically every trade candidate that comes up because, as we know, they're very active. I mean, since Roseman took over in 2010 as general manager, they've executed 98 trades. You know, that's second in the NFL to only the Patriots, right, who have 111. So they're nearing the century mark under Roseman, and we know that he likes to wheel and deal. And also, every time a good player becomes available, he puts a call in, and sometimes it's more than a call. Sometimes they lay markers down. So it's like, you know, I understand you're looking for a first-round pick, but if it ends up here, you know, then we're in. And so that's when, oftentimes when you hear in all the in trade speculation reports, the Eagles are one of those teams, and it's like, yeah, I mean, maybe it probably won't end up there, but you know, but it would not be surprised at all if they check in or have checked in on Julio Jones. I think that is the case, that they have. However, they just used the first-round pick on Devontae Smith. The year before that, they used the first-round pick on Jalen Reagor. They've invested four picks overall in the past two drafts on wide receiver. They're tight against the salary cap. They're in a team in transition. And really, I think what they should do is put the young receivers mm-hmm. out there, allow them to get the bulk of the reps, kind of grow this thing more organically instead of bringing in, granted, a hell of a receiver in Julio Jones, who's 32 years old and is making a ton of money, and I think they need to build it a different way. So while they probably looked into it, I don't think he ends up here.
See what the Slim Reaper could do. Tim, man.
I like the Slim Reaper a lot. Dude.
Yeah.
I think he can be a heck of a player.
No doubt about it. So, hey, man, I appreciate you coming on. Always a pleasure talking shop. I hope you enjoy what's left of your summer. And, you know, training camp's going to be here before we know it. And the grind, as you know, it never stops. The marathon continues.
Yes, sir. We'll try to get a little downtime. Thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure to talk to you, sir.
For sure.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Byer, and I'm talking with TD.
Something new. Stop. Drop. Shut him down.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD. This one right here, folks, I've been looking forward to this. This is a guy that we've matched to the Titans, and it happened. I'm excited about it just to get to cover this young man. Get to cover him, cover, we'll say it that way. Elijah Molden, DB out of Washington, the Tennessee Titans, third round pick. Elijah, what's going on, man?
I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially for the Father's Day focus.
Yeah, no doubt. And we're going to get into that in a bit. Let's kind of start it off, though, with the Titans fans. You know, I know that they've made quite an impression upon you already. What can you say about this electric fan base?
I mean, I haven't met anyone in person so far, and it's kind of funny because, like, I'm not trying to win people over necessarily, but I think it's just kind of me being who I am, that aligns with the Titan fan base is all about. So it's funny to see, me kind of connect with the fan base, and I can't wait to actually see him in person and play for him.
No doubt about it. And Louis Riddick, ESPN NFL draft analyst, just analyst period of football, he called you the Jedi of the slot. And that's something that the Titans fans really took to. They loved that. What all is involved with playing that nickel position? That's what I want to get you to elaborate upon, because, you know, when I look at it, it's like you got to be a linebacker, a DB. Like, there's a lot that you have to do. What makes that so difficult?
Yeah, I think more than anything, you just have to keep your head on a swivel. Mm-hmm. Like you said, there's times where you're going to be covering the fastest guy on the field, or there's going to be times where you got to fit in the box and make a tackle in the box. So you can't just be a cover guy, or you can't just be a run stopper. You have to be it all, and that's something that I look forward to. You know, I feel like I did a good job in college. I look forward to continuing to improve here in Tennessee.
Is there a certain mindset that it takes to be able to do that? Because you mentioned run fitting, and I mean, like, getting your run fits. You're not the biggest guy, but you do that well as far as coming down and feeling.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never really had a problem with tackling because my size. I think tackling is 80% mental and effort, and then 20% physical. If anything, like, the fact that I'm tackling bigger guys, my pad level is lower.
That makes sense. And looking at you as a player, it's funny because when the Titans selected you, this is what I said. I said, this is a really good deal for this team because it's buy one, get two free. And the reason why I say that is you fill three, actually four, because special teams as well. But watching you play, I mean, we talked about this before, lining up on the outside, you could do that. You could line up as a nickel, but you could also drop back and be a post safety. So what makes you able to just do all of those things so well?
So really, I did all those things in college, and it was because I was comfortable with the playbook and comfortable with the scheme and the details of our defense. Because, like, from a fundamental standpoint, nickel translates to every position in the backfield. So going from nickel to outside, nickel to safety, which I did most of the time, it was pretty easy. Just my keys were different. Now it's like right now I'm just learning the playbook here, and I can't be that person who coach can't throw me on the field and say, oh, go play whatever position, because I'm still learning the playbook and I'm still trying to earn my spot on this team and make an impact wherever. So right now I'm just, you know, I'm digging my head in the playbook and it's coming along. It's getting easier. I'm able to do what I'm supposed to do better now.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Elijah, because I asked Coach Vrabel last week about that specifically, how you were coming along, because obviously, you know, as media, we're not seeing you on the field as much, but he said that you are still making progress. So I want to ask you, not getting that full speed on the field learning, how much is that walkthrough that they're doing? How much does that help you just kind of complement the classroom part of it?
Yeah, and Coach Vrabel always talks about, like, you know, I'm doing what I can. Yes, I'm making progress in my recovery. I'm happy about that. But right now, I'm focusing on what I can do, not what I can't do.
Yeah.
And right now, it's mental reps. It's learning from others' physical mistakes. And really, it's just, you know, taking the time to watching and learning from these veterans. And just kind of picking up what they're putting down.
And we're talking to Elijah Molden, Titans DB, third-round pick, future contributor. I'm glad you mentioned the veterans because that's kind of where I wanted to go next with Imani Hooker, because I asked him also about you, and one of the things he said was your football IQ, you know, and he said you're picking things up really well. Having a guy like Imani and then having Kevin Byard, how much have – and I know it's limited, right, because you're brand new here, but how much has – having those guys helped you just kind of bring things along and try to digest this playbook?
I think it's just nice because, you know, in the meeting room, you can see how just how much of a pro they are. Really, they make everything look easy. And that's comforting for me, too, just because I know I'll get to that point in terms of knowing the playbook. Especially just, like, I can ask them any question, they'll know the answer. But really, once we got those guys in the meeting room, you can feel, like, I guess the energy of the room shift a little bit. You know what I mean? Just because, you know, they do their job really well, and you know, they're leaders in that room.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's something that Imani Hooker did when he got here. He made that impression, and he was able to key in on the nickel role, and then that just led to just continuous building. So I believe that's what you're going to do. This team, though, you did a lot of studying, and we talked about this when I had you on here before with your teammates, and we talked about, you know, what you knew about this team and the research you did. Now that you're in the building, the first impressions, are they kind of along the lines of what you saw outside looking in?
Yeah, I think so, but, you know, I didn't just looking from the outside in, you know what I mean? Like, I was just watching football the same way everyone else was. I was watching them play, but now I know all the complexities behind what they were doing and all the checks and this and that that went behind, you know, that people watching from the outside in don't understand. So it's you know, football is difficult, you know what I mean? It's easy when you're sitting on the couch to say, oh, this person should do that, but mm-hmm. – There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes, and that's what I'm learning right now.
What are some of your early impressions of Mike Vrabel? I know he's a guy that gets very detailed, and he could get fiery. So what do you think of a coach so far?
A couple of things. I even said this to my parents. Like, you can tell he loves his job.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And that's as a coach, like, when you see that, you know, I guess I was just told in the NFL, you know, like, this is a job now, you know, this is a business, and I always attributed that with people kind of, you know, going to their job, but maybe not loving it, you know, kind of because, oh, it's a business now. But he really loves it, and that fires me up. And also, you got to be on your P's and Q's during meetings.
Yeah, he will call you out. And then you also have Coach Scott Booker, who he's another good coach. I'm sure you're appreciating his time as well.
Yeah, Coach Booker, of course. You know, really, I can go to him more midget with questions. I'm starting to get a feel for how they coach, and really, like, I was even thinking about this today. I just want to be coachable. You know, I want to be someone who We want to make mistakes. We want to make new mistakes. And, you know, I don't want to be reactive whenever they give me a coaching call. I just want to take it in and learn from it.
Right, be like a sponge. That's a good point. The communication side of things, Elijah, that's something that's huge. It's something that, you know, Kevin Byard mentioned so many times after games when they lost. So now that you're in there, how has the communication been? Do you see guys, you know, talking as much as they need to and doing those type of things in the film room as well as on the field?
Yeah, I think that's one of the focuses this offseason is being coordinated on the back end and really the whole defense. And that starts with, you know, knowing what I have to do, my position on the defense, and then communicating just different keys to my teammates. So, yeah, it's an emphasis.
And your football IQ, just to get back on that, that's something that it seems like you've, you know, from stuff that I've read, you've had that since you were a younger football player. You know, we're talking preteen, you know what I mean? So for you, like, what is it, how much has your dad had that influence? What is it that, you know, has made you play cornerback?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like my IQ for sure came at an early age from my dad, just kind of noticing little details and indicators. But I think it comes from seeing things from a different perspective on the field. Because if we're too close to what you have to do and all the madness that's going on the field, then you're not going to be able to see and digest those keys. And there's even a couple times, like now at practice, where, you know, I'll get wrapped up in all the complexities of my position, so I just have to like take a step back, and then I can process everything that's going on, and that's when I can really play the way I'm supposed to play, and I've been getting there.
And I know Father's Day is coming up in a couple of weeks. Obviously, you're one. It's almost like a theme, right? There's so many father and son NFL combos this year. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. But so, if you had to, you know, just pick one thing that you would say to your dad, now that you're at this point that he once got to, what would you say to him?
I just say, you know, and he knows this too, but, you know, thank you for letting me live out my dreams. And he's always given me little nuggets of advice. Keeping things in perspective, and I know that I'm loved by him and the rest of my family. So when I step on the football field, I can do what I do, you know, because of him. And then when I step off the field, I can be who I am because of him. So, I appreciate him and I love him.
There you have it. That's Tennessee Titans defensive back, third-round pick, Elijah Molden. Elijah, we appreciate you coming on.
No, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
No problem.